From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Today on the program, a conversation with writer Timothy Egan about the rise and fall of the Ku Klux Klan in the Midwest. It's all presented as a gripping story in his new book, A Fever in the Heartland. That's later this hour. But first, U.S. Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy. The Democrat from Schaumburg represents the 8th District, which takes in some of Chicago's northwest suburbs. He's also a ranking member on the U.S. House Select Committee on Strategic Competition between the United States and the Chinese Communist Party. And last week, he was part of a bipartisan delegation that met in California with Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen. That delegation was led by Republican House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Meanwhile, closer to home, Krishnamoorthy has also been critical of inaccuracies in how the U.S. Census Bureau estimates the population of Illinois. Remember that last decade's worth of stories about people leaving the state in droves? Well, turns out when the census actually counted people in 2020, it wasn't nearly as bad as we'd been led to believe. But those problems with the estimates appear to be repeating themselves, so Krishnamoorthy is pushing the Bureau on its methods. In order to accommodate the congressman's schedule, we spoke earlier this morning. Because of that, we're not taking calls live, but let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. Okay, here now is Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy. Representative Krishnamoorthy, welcome back to the 21st Show. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here, Brian. Thank you.
So I want to begin. You were part of the bipartisan delegation that visited with Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen in California in the past week. How did that come about?
Well, basically, President Tsai has periodically made transits through the United States. I think 6 prior transits on her way to visit other countries in Central and South America. And so she stopped in Los Angeles, and Speaker McCarthy convened a bipartisan meeting of legislators to meet with her. And so it was a terrific set of meetings.
What were your big takeaways from those meetings?
I think at least a couple takeaways. One is that there's real depth of support on both sides of the aisle for Taiwan and its people. Under the Taiwan Relations Act, we are required to help Taiwan defend itself. And yet we also have something called the One China policy, which recognizes that, we don't want a situation where anything but peaceful means are utilized by the People's Republic of China with regard to its differences with Taiwan. And so I think there's a real deep well of support on both sides for making sure that the Taiwan people are able to maintain their freedom and democracy. And if they decide to reunify with the PRC, that they do so on peaceful means. The second big takeaway is that, Taiwan is in a precarious position. We see the PRC, which is ruled by the Chinese Communist Party, using coercive means right now to try to get its way, to try to, reunify with Taiwan. And, given its size, and its militaristic approach, Taiwan is in a very challenging position. And so now more than ever, we need to support the Taiwanese people.
Well, I wondered what you made, speaking of that, of the apparent reaction of the Chinese Communist government, the People's Republic of China's Communist government, which is holding military drills, simulating strikes on Taiwan.
Yeah, I think that these bellicose measures on the part of the Chinese Communist Party, the CCP, is really not helping matters. I think that we want a situation that lowers tensions, not heightens tensions. And if they think that they can intimidate us as members of Congress to not meet with Taiwanese officials, especially on American soil, then they're absolutely wrong, and they're doing the opposite of intimidating us. They're emboldening us to do more of the same.
You were also part of a group that visited Taipei last, I think it was in August, with former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. How was this meeting different? What's changed since then?
Well, I think that those meetings were very similar to these in the sense that, again, when I visited Taiwan with Speaker Pelosi, we were able to, for the first time, have face-to-face discussions, often very candid ones, with regard to the type of aid and the amounts of aid that is required for the Taiwanese people to be able to defend themselves. And I think that this time we were able to conduct similar talks, obviously in a different setting. But I think that since last summer, you know, we've advanced further assistance. So now we're in a position to talk about not only what we're going to do, but what we've done already and what's gone well and maybe what needs to be tweaked or changed.
Why should people in Illinois care about what happens in Taiwan?
I think for at least two reasons. One is, you know, Taiwan is incredibly important economically for the United States and the world. It produces, for instance, the majority of semiconductor chips and certainly all the advanced semiconductor chips that are used in the world. Why is that important? Well, as your listeners probably remember, during the pandemic, there were all kinds of supply chain snafus and constraints that happened because of a shortage of these semiconductor chips, whether it was for automobiles or for consumer electronics or for any number of other items. And so allowing Taiwan to flourish also means, you know, allowing our supply chains to remain resilient. By the way, they are now investing billions of dollars in the United States to produce those semiconductor chips here in the U.S., which is a big win for American manufacturing and is a direct consequence of the CHIPS and Science Act that we passed on a bipartisan basis last summer. I think the second big reason for helping the Taiwanese people is, as I mentioned, under law, we are required to help supply articles of defense for the people of Taiwan. But in addition, Taiwan's democracy is one of the most freewheeling and boisterous in the world. Its commitment to human rights, to freedom, and to allowing its people to realize their full potential is something that is a system of governance that's being attacked by the CCP. The Chinese Communist Party desperately wants the rest of Asia and indeed the world to believe that that type of governance is not sustainable, that somehow this experiment with democracy in Taiwan cannot last. And, you know, we have to prove them wrong. That's important not only for the people of Taiwan, but for any people and any government anywhere in the world that seeks to, you know, emulate or reflect those same values.
Let me take a moment to remind listeners, if you're just joining us, this is the 21st show, and we're speaking with Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy. He's a Democrat who represents a significant portion of Chicago's northwest suburbs. He's also ranking member on the U.S. House Select Committee on Strategic Competition between the United States and the Chinese Communist Party. You've also taken an interest in census issues, and I want to come to that in a minute, but while we are still on this subject of the U.S. government and the Chinese Communist Party, I want to ask you about where are you on this possibility of banning the social media video sharing app TikTok? Is that something feasible? Is it a good idea? Where do you come down on that?
Well, I don't necessarily believe that it will be banned, but I do think that we need to force at least a sale of the company to owners who are not beholden to the CCP. Your listeners may know this, but TikTok is owned by a company called ByteDance, a Chinese company which is obligated under law to provide access to all user data to the CCP and not disclose when it does so. In addition, it has a CCP cell embedded within the company, such that it controls the policies of the company. That's why, for instance, Uyghur content has been suppressed. I'm talking about content that's critical of the Uyghur genocide that's underway today in China. That is also why other content is highlighted or basically amped up. They call it heated, H-E-A-T-E-D, heated. And that's disturbing. And so my sense is that this property, which is very valuable, TikTok, will end up being sold to another company, that it will not go dark, but we can't have the current ownership structure because I think it is detrimental to our national security. And that's why, the Director of National Intelligence, the CIA director, the Biden administration wants to see that forced sale happen.
All right. In the time we have remaining, I do want to ask you about this issue with the Census Bureau and counting Illinois. What do you understand? And I outlined this in the introduction to this segment, but basically the actual count in 2020 revealed that some of the estimates of the previous decade about people, quote unquote, leaving Illinois in droves were not quite accurate. So what, these problems appear to be repeating themselves. What do you understand about why this is happening?
So the over the past decade, we've had repeated announcements from the Commerce Department, the Census Bureau, that Illinois has been losing population to the point where they said that the 2020 census showed a 0.1% decline of population of roughly 18,000 people from the 2010 census. Then they came back and told us that after looking at the methodology utilized and doing what's called a post-enumeration survey, the survey actually showed an increase of 257,000 people since 2010. And that would put our population over 13 million people for the first time. And so I wrote letters to the Census Bureau saying, okay, well, it appears that the census was wrong, and we would like to see the new numbers reflected in how federal resources are allocated to the different states, including Illinois. And not only that, but we'd also like to see the new numbers reflected in the actual kind of counts that are published by the Census Bureau for Illinois' population. And yet we haven't really seen progress on either of those counts. And so I'm trying to push the ball further to, kind of get that to happen. But it's a process, and so we're working with the Census Department to try to see what we can get done.
I wondered if you'd heard back from them on your letter.
We've heard not a response to the most recent letter, but to some prior letters. So I'm waiting to hear back from them about the most recent one. And by the way, Brian, the part that kind of gets people concerned, and indeed some people annoyed, is that the Census Bureau continues to put out numbers, whether it's for the population of Cook County or other places in Illinois, that does not seem to reflect the new methodology that would incorporate what they learned, based on their mistakes in the 2020 census. And so when they continue to put out those numbers and they look weird, I think that people are just kind of throwing up their hands saying, okay, well, it doesn't appear that the Census Bureau is really learning from its mistakes. And that's another problem as well.
Yeah, and we're also seeing media reports that basically take these new numbers without mentioning this context of past inaccuracies as well. Well, I'm sure that's an issue. Yeah, so I'm sure that's an issue you will continue to watch in the months ahead, and we will continue to follow it as well. Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today on the 21st show.
Absolutely. Thank you, Brian.
Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy is a Democrat. He represents the northwest suburbs of Chicago, the 8th District. It includes O'Hare Airport, Schaumburg, and Elgin. Coming up after a short break, we'll be talking with author Timothy Egan. His new book is called A Fever in the Heartland, The Ku Klux Klan's Plot to Take Over America and the Woman Who Stopped Them. That's after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.